With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or the motherly figure in your life? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send your recipient a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about, for example, your mom's life or any custom questions that you want to ask. And then she can either type her response or record her voice. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories forever. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. Obviously, we love anything surrounding storytelling. It's what we do. So to be able to gift this to my mom, to not only hear her stories, but the stories of my grandparents and other family members, it will create a cherished gift for all of us to enjoy. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use the code RAIN at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use the code RAIN for 10% off today. Murder in the Rain, where each week Emily Rowney, Alicia Holland, and Josh McCullough tell true crime stories of the Pacific Northwest. Murder in the Rain contains graphic content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome, everyone. As I mentioned last week, this week's episode is very special to us and is very different from our usual format. When Danielle Tudor was in town a few weeks ago for a political event, she was kind enough to schedule time with us. So we went to her mother's home and sat down with Danielle Tudor and Tiffany Edens, both survivors of Richard Gilmore, Portland's jogger rapist.
Another aspect that makes this episode different from our usual show is the audio quality. Since we were in a home, the sound was a bit off from the start, but throw in a pet bird, an ice machine, snacks, and three other adults talking on a couch behind us, and it sounds like we're at the hottest new cafe in town. When you hear talking, just know that it's Danielle's elderly mother and her friends enjoying some Papa Murphy's pizza. So please be patient with the noise. We promise that the stories are worth it. You may hear that in some of the portions, my voice sounds a little different. I was sitting behind the microphone, so I've re-recorded some of my portions for sound quality, but no words have been changed. We want to also give a content and trigger warning to listeners. The ladies will be discussing drug use, sobriety, sexual assault, and other potentially upsetting topics.
My name is Tiffany Edens.
My name is Danielle Tudor, and we are
the sisters in survival.
I love a name.
Yeah, so when I was in Estacada, doing a lot of meth. In fact, I would do meth up my butt. That was my favorite place because my veins were already blown
from doing heroin.
But I would literally run around in a black bikini, black combat boots with a machete on my side and a ball cap. And I would literally climb trees. I would hack trails in the forest. I did all sorts of things. But I was also suffering really bad from psychosis. Yeah, and I remember I go to jail and I went to jail a few times. Well, several times. I remember talking to my mom the last time I was arrested in 2014, and I was telling her, because my mom and I, we don't speak. In fact, it's her birthday today, and we just don't speak. I'm like, Mom, just trying to find me a bed so I can get out of here. You know, the judge said if you find me a spot. And she goes, do you know why he isn't speaking to you? And I just went down. I said, this is not the time to talk about my son. I go, I am crazy, like I'm schizophrenic right now. And my mom goes, well, good idea doing meth on top of schizophrenic. I go, it's the meth that's causing it. Stop talking. And all the girls on the pod were like, and I'm like, yeah. Stop talking. Oh, I'm pissed.
But I am coming up on 10 years this year.
Very
exciting. Yeah. Yeah. It was a rough ride. It was a really rough ride. After Gilmore raped me when I was 14, I started smoking weed and doing all that. Went to treatment a few times. And then I was doing quite well before 2007. And then when 2007 came upon us, when I did the lawsuit and I did those back-to-back parole hearings and whatnot, it wore me out and I got back into drugs. But it feels good to be who I am now because I have a little bit of that edge that I gathered when I was out doing running amok, running the streets. But it's really kind of crazy because I can go from speaking with legislators to talking to the person that is having a psychotic episode on the street. So I feel like I've just got well-rounded.
Yeah, you have a lot of tools in your toolbox.
A lot of tools. And that's what's so special about Danielle and I, in particular, this last year and a half, really getting a bond. Like, now she's my sister. Before, it was the other Gilmore victim.
It was a trauma bond, and now you have a true bond.
Yeah, and now I have a true bond. And we were able to, in Nashville, we got to be able to talk about some things. We discovered that politicians and media and all of those things will use us and pit us against each other. And for myself, like, I had to admit to her that I had a lot of jealousy and felt horrible because here I started this thing. And then I am in the gutter shooting heroin while my sister is still moving forward. But we came together and it's helped us, you know? And like I told her, because she was saying, you need to get a mentor. You did.
And she wanted, I said, she was ready to jump in.
Yeah, I said, I'm ready to come back. You know,
like, I want to do this. I'm passionate.
And she goes, well, you need a mentor. And I said, well, you're my mentor.
And I went,
surprise.
Surprise. You get to mentor me. Like, you know? Yeah, you get to be my mentor. And so since the last time we spoke in 2022, our relationship
has changed a lot.
Has changed so much. And there's no more pretenses. There's no more,
what is she going to do with that information?
There were definitely trust issues.
Right? Yeah.
Do you remember, I don't know which one of you it was that had reached out through, it may have been through Twitter or Facebook.
That was me.
Okay. And do you remember me asking, have you talked to Tiffany Edens?
Yeah.
And you're like, if you want to record separately, you can. And I'm thinking, wow, I must have really put up a lot.
I didn't know the dynamic, right? I didn't know your dynamic.
I thought that was so interesting. And I don't know why I wanted to know. But for some reason, I wanted to know. And we were still in that phase of our relationship. Yes.
Because you guys got along so well.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Fighting the same battle. So right. When she admitted that she maybe had a little bit of jealousy, did you also maybe have resentment that you dealt with too?
Oh yeah. Because you're talking to very strong-willed people. Mm-hmm. So then I've got her that's, well, we have the Tiffany Edens bill. And you're like, oh, okay, I'll go for the ride.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think it came to a point, I think, and a lot of it may just be our age and maturity, that you go, this is a bunch of crap.
Well, I think that
why are we doing this? Why are we like
there was
this?
A trusting moment. There was a moment, and I'm not going to use names because that's not the type of women that we are. But we were at the Capitol.
Yes, and, that was
Oregon, Washington.
And this is where
we were
broke
talking
the whole
about.
Thing.
Yeah, we were. She had gotten some bills sponsored and written and whatnot, and she invited me to come to the Capitol to be with her to promote and lobby for these bills. And I think I made the comment, what do you think about this one particular person? And she just kind of like
that's how people become best friends.
I know.
You don't like the same person.
Yeah.
And she goes, well, and I said, well, I don't think she's very, I don't think she was very nice. I said.
And then it went.
Yeah. And she goes, really?
Have I got a story
for you? And I think that being able to be vulnerable with her.
And it was at that point I told her, I've had trust issues with you because, you know, I've been hurt and taken advantage of, then I'm not sure
if I can trust
who to trust. And so it, rather than doing that, you become a loner. And I think that's actually the worst thing for survivors in our type of crime and situation, because you don't want to be a loner. Right. You need to be with other survivors. Yes. Yes. So what I could do, I could put out some fires. Now her and I, we can win a war.
Yeah.
So, and the first thing that comes to mind for me is justice for Katie Palmer. Okay. So they've built a large following, and you're talking about just getting one DA into office in a county in Texas, but yet they have garnered so much support. And the more, regardless of what the tragedy is, the more that those groups and survivors plus that support come together, and the larger that gets, the more we get change. Versus, well, I want to be out there and I want to do this, and it's all about
my own.
Well, then, honey, it will be all about you. Enjoy that, because what you get is what you're going to get.
And I think that
versus what you could have done,
I had to mature. I had to go through the darkness that I went through. I mean, I was very dark. You would not want to be with me. And I had to really learn vulnerability, humility, and trust. And I discovered that I had this heart and compassion for Danielle. And because of that more darker history of mine, I am now protective of her. And whatever I can do to support her, have her back, whatever it may be, because of my history in that realm that I was in, there's a lot of loyalty. You learn that. You learn loyalty or you get taken out. So it was just the right time for me to mature, to get older, to go through my darkest time, and then to be able to see Danielle as another victim of Gilmore, because I think also, too, because I was so young during that whole process, these guys were all older than me. And I was so young that it was, you know how kids are, the world revolves around them. And so it was me, you know, and I think that's because I was so much younger and it had been a decade or 6-7 years since your rape and my rape, and then the age differences.
7 years.
Seven years.
Yeah. I was 17. So when we went to trial, then I was 24.
She already had a baby.
Yeah. I already had a baby.
Yeah.
And
so you're over here into adulthood and you're.
I'm 14.
You're barely in puberty.
Totally different maturity, totally different lenses to see things.
So you had these, even though we were all separated at trial, you still had these whispers amongst us, kind of like, I'm still afraid to be home alone at night. Well, I sleep with the lights on.
And I never got to talk to them.
And she was never a part of that because they did their best to keep us separated so it wouldn't compromise the case. But she's the star witness here. She's here. So I don't know that she was ever
with us.
The only memory that I really have of you is dancing in the hallway.
Yeah.
That is the only memory that I really have that I remember seeing you as you were, you know, doing your pirouettes and all of that. And we're all just blown away thinking, how can she do that? But that was her life. That was normal to her. So she gravitated to what was normal. And we're all just blown away sitting there.
How is she doing that? And I'm just, wow.
Yeah, exactly. But it was a great distraction, though, because it just kind of took us all to a good place. You know?
And then we all went our separate ways, and we thought Gilmore was going to be gone for 60 years.
Yeah.
And then that was a rude awakening in 2007. But I think I needed to mature in order to let down that guard of, but this was my rape. You know, but I think that was that 14-year-old mind, you know. What are we doing here? You know? So be it, I don't think it's right nor wrong, but that was just a process that I had to go through.
Well, and from the beginning, you were the little sister.
Yeah.
And so even then, that makes sense for 2007, because even when it all happened, and then when the trial comes, again, you're the separate, you're the part.
Yeah. So they separated us then. Like,
why are they special? And why are they getting it when I had the same thing?
Like, it's really weird, and I think they do that with survivors, with victims, is that they keep us separated. I don't know why that's the culture of keeping us separated. That's just what they do. And I know that they have to, like, the DA's office has to protect their case, and you can't
have, they have to make sure your testimony says your testimony.
But I think they should have, when it was all said and done, they should have brought us all together.
Or something, you know, for those that wanted to, or... Because it might have changed the way that I healed.
I think it definitely should have had
those older sisters.
Right. Well, and Colleen was the same age as you.
Yeah.
She was another 13
So now when we go to trial, she's got to be, what, 22 maybe? Hers was 1980 or 81. Mm-hmm. So she's kind of got a few years ahead of you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
so it could have changed. I don't know what it would be like.
And I think that's why we have the vision that we do for Sisters in Survival, because it's more than just telling the story in the book. Where it leads is to the power that's behind your story, you know, legislatively and changing things for the person that comes behind you. Mm-hmm. But it's also creating that community for survivors, that they have a place to get resources. So
they have other sisters.
Yes. Let's say I want to do what they did in my state, because state laws are what affects you the most. Right. I can reach out to them, and I can find out what I need to do, and I can use them as a resource. Just like she calls me her mentor, which I'm not sure.
Still upset about.
It's just a lot of responsibility. And I think I felt a lot of responsibility when she said that, and I'm thinking, man, this crap has got to stop. I mean, I need to really get my act together.
Because I was like, I want to learn how to do all that. I don't know the people.
And that your
first instinct. I have a good mouthpiece, though.
Your first instinct is, wait a minute, this is my thing.
Is it real? Mm. Oh, yeah.
And then, yes, you have to be mature enough to go, wait a minute, this isn't about me.
Right. The whole reason you're doing this.
Yes, is for others. So if you're in it, just because you want the light on you, then you're in it for the wrong reason. And unfortunately, I think in one of my experiences, that's what I saw, an individual that wanted the light on them. I mean, because this individual literally came in on a bill that I was working on.
And took it.
And took it.
Wow.
And actually harmed it. And we didn't get what we wanted.
And you know what? And I mean, I'd be just, like, you know what, sissy? Let me handle this.
I'm like,
here, go there.
This is what I need. I know how to use machete.
Well, don't go there, chick.
You know,
don't go there.
You know what's interesting, though? When that was happening, that was and you could see it and sense it in the media, she was getting clean and sober. And she saw it. Mm. She saw it. She saw what was happening. Yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just like, wow.
You know,
girl.
I'm pretty good at reading people, especially, you know, you have to be in order to survive, okay? Especially when you're hanging with the Hells Angels and stuff. Like, you are. I remember one guy said, "You're not in Kansas anymore, are you, Dorothy?" I was like, "I don't think so, man." But, you know, but I could see it and I got pissed. What is this shit? Even though I had my own resentments and my own, I felt bad because I tapped out of the game. It just is what it was. I was exhausted and I didn't know. I was naive. I didn't know how much they suck out of you. The media, the lobbyists, the blah, 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 blah. But I had to go through my own thing, but I could see what this particular person was doing. And it pissed me off. And I was like, oh, please, Lord, let me get back in there. Let me show her what I've got.
So really, the fact that when we were at the Capitol, that would be then 2023, right?
Yeah.
When we were had our legislation.
November,
and for her
October,
to
November.
Even bring that up and to have had a similar experience was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, because okay. I wanted to be able to... I didn't know how I was going to let Danielle know you're safe with me. I've got her back. I don't need the Tiffany Edens in lights anymore. You know what I mean? I don't need that. My biggest passion is just to help others get clean and sober if somebody's hurt you and you're doing this. I get it. I've been there. But I wanted to check her radar, so to speak, with that question. Because I wanted to see if she was picking up what I was laying down that I had seen.
Get a judge of that radar.
Yeah.
Are we reading people the same way?
Yeah.
And I know we're not the only ones to go through this and to feel that. And I think it's
sure
just
there's hundreds and hundreds.
Yeah, it's creating that atmosphere that we need each other.
Yeah.
We need each other, and we are stronger when
we
work
together
than when you work by yourself.
That's the best advertisement for Crime Con and any other true crime festival.
And that's what we want to talk about.
True crime podcasting plays a very important role that really isn't available anywhere else. When you think of normal media journalism.
Yeah, it's all narratives.
You get, here's our 2-minute story, here you go.
And we're only gonna give you what,
and you're not the first thing.
And they will pit victim against victim.
Yes. The first thing I do with however many news pieces we've done is to read it to see if it's correct. And I am amazed how
many times,
most often, it's not correct.
Yeah,
it's
like, and it
no,
comes
that's
off
not,
differently.
That's not correct. No, no, that's not. Yes, versus,
and it's not conveyed
crime,
the way that we were saying it.
So when you're doing true crime podcasting, when
you're
giving
people
like us a chance to set that record straight, hey, this is where we're coming from. This is what happened. And you let them create that platform that gets spread around.
Yeah.
And it is an area where there really is a lot of potential for survivors and for survivor advocacy. And I don't know.
I think also with podcasts, it's like we get to be real people.
Yeah.
And the people that are listening are real people.
Yeah.
They want to hear the realness.
They want to hear the real raw.
I have had so many comments about your episode. Like people really, really loved it because it was, heart-wrenching.
Yeah. I had to go get a colonoscopy because I'm at the age.
But God forgive me.
And I know. I did the real one, not the little commercial.
Yeah.
I was flushing out my system and I'm watching those and I'm like, turn off the TV, turn off the TV. I can't stand it. But, you know, I deal with that. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners and a lot of people in our community, like when I go to the hospital and they're trying to find a vein, I have to say, I'm sorry, that is scar tissue. It's really not a vein. I'm an XIV user. And, it can be shaming. Mm. I've had some where they're like, go get the ultrasound because I can't find a thing. And I'm like, you know, check it out, chick.
Right.
I don't care what RN is behind you. You know what I mean? But I think being able to have a media or a venue or a way where we can just really share our truth.
The realness.
The real parts of us, not the pieces that you see on us on Your Voice, Your Vote, or you know, posing with
not
Governor
/survivor/clean.
Yeah,
slash
this is Tiffany and Danielle.
Yeah.
This is what we went through. These are the feelings that we've had. These are the hurdles that we had to get through just to have a trusting relationship, and that's taken years.
Yeah.
And speaking of, that was in Nashville. And I'm not sure if you guys are allowed to talk about what you were doing there.
We are embarking on, we do have a finished book proposal. We have a collaborator and we went to Nashville to meet with her. And we got to stay together and we shared each other's story. And I think I was from like 2 years old up until now. And I think I probably shocked Danielle. And
just a little.
I go, yeah, I used to break into houses and take people's
safes. And then she started telling us about how they had to carry one huge one down the stairs, and she was the lookout. And I'm just like,
and I was so high. I was so high on a bunch of yay and I don't know what else. And I have no shoes on. I'm in boxers or something. And my boyfriend's like, get out of the way. And I'm like, let me help you, babe. You know. And we're just broke into this house. It's daylight. And I'm like, oh my God. And he's like, get out of the way.
And I'm like, I'm sorry.
And then he pukes. And I'm like, don't leave your DNA. You know? My gosh, you just left your DNA. Get your ass in the car. Oh, but, you know, I used to do adventurous things like that.
Adventurous. Some go hiking. Some go geocaching.
Some steal safes.
Yeah. And steal safes. I mean, it's whatever you...
Whatever your Saturday is.
Yeah.
Yours, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, she got to learn a lot of the darkness, too, and the psychosis and...
See, and I wasn't aware
losing
of
my
of that.
Son.
That was all new to you. That was all new to me. The only thing I knew was when Gilmore decided not to have a parole hearing in 2016, Mara Stein, who is someone that has worked a lot, written a lot about this case, did an interview, and she, Tiffany was in the article and stuff, and I remember when I talked to Mara, she had already talked to Tiffany, and I'm like, well, how is Tiffany? And she goes, just a little rough around the edges.
I'm like, just a little.
Cool.
Just a little. Yeah. She's just a little rough.
And then how many years later? 16, 17.
Yep.
7 10, years later, yeah. We end up in Nashville and I hear the little rough around the edges.
What that really meant.
The adventures.
And I was like,
she was like, whoa. And she was like, I never want to make you angry.
She's like,
I'm like, sister, I got your back.
So it's a juicy book, is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
you got to read the book to get all the stories.
She's
to get all the juice.
She's standing there telling all of this, and she's just starting to cry and weep. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, Elsa, I knew. When you were a little rough around the edges, I had no idea. So I'm hugging her, and I'm like, I'm so sorry, I didn't know. You know, and
but you wouldn't.
How much is there that we really don't know what's happening inside of survivors because we don't talk about it. We don't feel comfortable talking about it.
It's hard to be vulnerable.
I think it really has. I mean, you're talking how many years down the road since our assault, but it's another piece of our healing.
Yeah.
So we do have a website.
Yes, we do.
Yes, it is. Yes.
It's beautiful.
Yes.
What's the address?
Oh, yeah. Sisters in Survival, the book, alloneword.com.
Yes.
It has to be all one word, and you've got the book, Sisters in Survival, the book.com.
Yes.
All one word.
So you'll find a little bit of information on there. So we've got our website up and running. And
we've got letters to other survivors written by us.
Yeah. And that is, you know, one of the things I had said in mine is that, you know, that healing is a journey. It's not a destination.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
I don't think you ever reach that destination. Yeah. It is a journey and it seasons throughout your life.
Yeah.
And I think one of the most surprising seasons for me was when I stepped forward and shared my story. And it opened that platform and that pathway for, 15 years of advocacy.
That's
and
why she's my mentor.
I had no clue that was and is an important part of my life and my healing. Because what I didn't get, I can make sure that somebody else gets, you know. So their justice really becomes mine.
Yeah.
So I claim their justice because I got to be a part of that. And so it's just interesting to me how the different phases and the seasons and the journeys, how all of that kind of plays into it. And
you get to read that in the book once we get get it produced.
Right. Then that's where we're at right now.
So yeah, we're waiting.
We're in the process of.
And I don't like it.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. It's a weight gain now.
And then you feel like you're rejected.
Yeah, so we are reaching out to agents.
We're survivors. We're not supposed to be rejected. How dare you do that?
Yes.
Yes. This is a very trauma-informed approach.
Yes. So there is one publisher.
Yeah.
There is a publisher that we have reached out to that we feel like we would be a
good
fit for. And it's in their hands. I had actually reached out to her a year ago, and I just queried her out of the blue. Said, hey, this is what's happening right now. And just shared everything that was going on with Gilmore, some of the story. And I was surprised because she responded right away.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay.
Weird.
And she goes, yes, I would like to know more. Can you send me a few sample chapters? And I was surprised because she responded right away.
Yeah.
And she goes, yes, I would like to know more. Can you send me a few sample chapters? And I'm like, uh-oh.
Just wait a little bit. Yeah.
And so
let me circle around. Let me circle back on that, okay? That's what I say all the time. Let me circle back.
Well, I didn't respond. I'm thinking, what do I do now? So what many people probably don't know is that I think it was 2013, 2014, I actually had an agent and book proposal and stuff. And at that time was pursuing a book. And we actually had publishers who were interested, actually had meetings with some great publishers, but the agent was not right. And I could tell,
something
I'm like,
uh-oh,
this guy's going to blow it. And sure enough, you know, so that's always been in the back of my mind. And I did a lot of research and I'm just like, well, let's just put that on the back burner. So then we're going through all of this with Gilmore and I'm just going to reach out to this individual. And then she responded and I'm thinking, now what do I do? And as I was sitting there, I just knew in my heart, it was like this voice said, you've been waiting for Tiffany. See, at the time that I was doing that, she was not ready. And
yeah, I was just getting clean and sober.
Now she's ready. And I'm thinking, wait, what do you mean we've been waiting? I've been waiting all this time for her? What?
I had to do some stuff, okay?
She had to have adventures.
Yeah. She was on well, let me tell you, adventure. She's added some real sparks to the book.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
That's literally the first thing I thought when you said that agent wasn't right, is that the timing wasn't right.
No, it was not.
You guys wouldn't have the
relationship.
No,
we would not.
And we would have missed a whole part of your journey. Right?
Exactly.
It could have even created more of a wedge by saying, why does she get to have a book?
Yeah.
She's a vital part of that story. And I knew that. I knew when that voice was saying, are you ready for Tiffany now?
Are you like, ready?
I don't know if I
I'm just like,
and then we did some bonding over trying to find a book. What was that one? Oh, I'm not going to say names.
Okay,
but
so I reached out to her. I sent her a message and I said, hey, Tiffany, have you ever thought about a book? She's like, oh my gosh, yes, yes, yes. I've been thinking about that. I don't know how to do it. And I'm like,
yeah,
okay.
Ooh, that's okay. Why she's my mentor.
Here we go.
Duh.
Here we go. Well, this is what I did. I kind of did a thing.
Yeah, she did it. She was like, I kind of did this thing.
And I put you in it.
And we have a meeting. And I was like, okay. Tell me when and where, whatever you want me to do.
But I think probably the most important lesson that we are learning is there is right timing to everything. And there is the
agent,
right person.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get a lot of no's and it only takes the one.
One, yes.
The one. And I think we both, one way or another, we know this is going to get done. However we have to do it, it's going to get done. It would be nice to have a publisher.
An agent, publisher, whatever.
Yeah.
But we'll do it,
we've got a great collaborator who is just as dedicated as we are. So.
Which, and we went through a couple. We met with two. One was very kind. One was cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I was like,
not a clinical term.
Yes, very clinical. Behavioral health supervisor.
I'm just going to say, okay, so when the Attorney General of Oklahoma calls you on a Friday night on his way home from work and says, don't do it.
You and listen. Then I'd already signed it and I'd already done stuff. And then so his wife is on the phone with me and I'm like, I don't know her. She's big wig attorney in Oklahoma.
Yeah, she's an attorney
and she's like,
as well.
Tiffany, I just want you to relax and have a good weekend. And I'm like, okay, I'm really scared of this lady. And here I am. I'm like, whatever. If I would have seen her, I probably would have been able to scare her. But she had too much.
She was dealing
trauma.
With her own trauma. Oh. Yeah, and she was writing about it too.
Yeah, at the same time.
So,
and I'm like,
I don't think it was a good.
How could you handle our trauma?
If you just learned about yours
just doing
and
your
now
trauma.
You're now working yeah. through that.
Scary.
It just, yeah. Yeah.
So we got out of that.
Yeah.
We were both like, oh my gosh. We got out of that one. And then we somehow got connected with Allie mm-hmm. Anderson. And she is so amazing. She's amazing.
And it's kind of her specialty, working with trauma victims and telling their story and stuff. So she's been a very good fit. And
she's just as passionate. Like mm-hmm. she cares. Like she's like, okay, ladies. This is what I have some plans to do, da, 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 da. And, you know, we've already paid her for the book proposal. That's done and over with. Mm-hmm. But she is still investing
engaged and
wanting to see this and promoting it to documentarians. And,
right.
You know, like she's like pitching our story to her connections.
Wow.
And so...
Yeah.
We just felt safe with her, too.
Yeah.
I did.
So I think we were at a low point a couple of weeks ago, and we were on a Zoom call, and there's Tiffany and I were just like, you know, I'm just not doing well with this waiting, and I'm getting so discouraged. And she's just like, wait a minute here.
She goes, the worst case is we're going to raise money, and we'll publish the book ourselves.
Yeah.
And I was
recently with a partner started a hybred publishing company. So she said, however we do this,
it's gonna happen.
We are doing this. This
well,
is not.
Anything,
not
I gotta coming. Read it. So
yes.
It needs to get
done. Yeah. Yes. Everybody say that. Everybody just get out there and start saying, we need this book.
Yes.
Because
exactly.
It will be entertaining. It will be educational. It will be compassionate.
One of the things. That I will share in that story is when we went to trial and it was my turn to take the stand. And I have the trial transcript and our testimony and everything. And I got that probably in 2013 or 2014, somewhere along the line. And as I went through and I was reading my testimony, the first thing the prosecutor, Russ Ratto, asked me, did anything unusual happen to you on November 11th, 1979? And I go, not that I can think of.
He probably was like, no, Danielle, wrong answer. Wrong
like,
answer. Are you sure? Let me rephrase
this. And I'm reading that going,
we were all shocked.
Yeah, I mean, you were that's
shocked.
A stressful situation.
I was just like, oh no, nothing
good
I can think
night.
Of.
Good. Yeah, I don't think so. Just went and got some groceries or
and
something.
And I can only imagine what Russ Ratto was thinking.
Russ was probably like, he probably just
what's
went with
happen?
It.
What's
he just probably
happen?
Went with it and knew and supported
it. But common. I think he did go, traumatic events with a specific date. You
let
know,
me
like,
rephrase no. that. On November 11th, I'm like, oh yeah, yeah.
Oh yes.
That, oh yeah, that guy. That guy was in my house.
So I think we envision it as there's a little bit of humor in there because without that in life, you know, even in the worst of cases, you still need some of that. You still need to have joy in your life. Otherwise, why is life even worth living?
Right.
You know, and
right.
I think that's one of the greatest pieces of revenge is being able to live your life joyfully. I think that's one of the best things about revenge that you can get.
And I just want the survivors out there, you know, the ladies, you know, in fact, I have a gal that will text me, you know, we've even shared phone numbers and she lives in Florida and she's like 21 and she sent me paintings because she's an artist. And I think the only thing that she needed was to know she's not alone. I mean, she just texted me this morning. Hi, I missed you. I hope you're doing good. And I think that's what survivors need. They just need to know they're not alone. And they need to know that they have older sisters that have their back. So the person that hurt her, she told her parents, but they didn't believe her, which is so common and horrible. And this person still lives in her neighborhood. So she calls me the first time we've ever spoken. It's always been on Facebook. She calls me and she's just crying. And she's like, I'm really having a hard time. I didn't know who else to call. And I'm like, it's okay. How you doing, sissy? And she goes, will you just be on the phone with me when I drive in? Because he's always staring at me. And I said, why don't you give me his address? And she goes, really? And I said, give me his address. So she sent me the address. So I've got the address. You never know.
Yeah.
Allegedly. But all she needed was just for me to be on the phone while she could walk from her car to her front door. And she was like, okay. And then she's talking to her mom and she's like, okay, I made it. Thank you so much. And just that empowered her to know, even though Danielle Tudor and Tiffany Eden, blah, 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 but she could call me from Florida in the middle of the night, and I just sat on the phone with her. That impacts me, and that's the why, and that's why it's so important that our book does get published, the reach that it will have, and the scary stories or adventures. And what's kind of cool is that because Danielle and I have come together, she had a totally different path than I did, because victimization and healing is not cookie cutter. It's not in a book. It's all very different. So she can reach those that didn't have as many adventures. I can reach those that had adventures.
It's a spectrum. Mm-hmm.
It's a, And
yes.
And it's relatable to that many more people. You know, I also sponsor women in a 12-step program. Every single one of them, except one, and I've sponsored several, have all been sexually abused, sexually raped, tricked out, gang raped, the whole thing. And they've never had somebody that experienced something like that that said, I'm here. I still have, I will have like sponsors with 20 years. Will say, Tiffany, I'm sending somebody to you. They want to do get your voice back, or they want to talk to you. And I'm like, of course. And so that was another thing that I'd done was a grassroots survivor group called Get Your Voice Back. And I haven't done it in a while, but people keep asking. Really, I got kind of re-traumatized. I needed a break because I was hearing things that, oh my gosh, you know, just horrific. But that's what I want the book to do, is I want survivors that are being quiet, not talking, maybe they're doing drugs, maybe they're not, and they feel like they don't have a voice or they're scared to even mention it. I want them to be inspired, empowered to start speaking, and that they have sisters there. You know, like I told this gal in Florida, she goes, I really wish I could meet you. And I said, honey, you never know. I'll come out to see you or something. I go, just don't take me by alligators or crocodiles. You know, but because she lives in a rural, like she wears cowboy hat and all that. But that's what I want to do.
And that is so much beauty to come from so many different things for so many different people.
Mm-hmm. Like if Danielle and I could just travel around and, honey, you want me to ride in the car with you while we go look at him? I'll do that. You don't have to look at him. Yeah, I'll look at him. If that's all you need, then that's what I'll do.
I really don't think there is. In fact, I know there isn't a book out there that represents the full spectrum from the time of the assault, going through trial, parole hearings, changing laws, lawsuits, and still to this day.
Yeah. Or one person's point of view.
Yes.
Right.
So you're getting the whole spectrum here, which is really cool. I have somebody at work that was recently raped, and she didn't have anyone to talk to.
And it was actually a couple of my bosses. They're like, you know, it might be good if you have a conversation with her. So I got together with her and started talking, and it really, really made a difference for her. And I was able to share that perspective. As we sat across the table, I said, where you're at right now, all you see is a dark tunnel and you don't see light. And I said, I'm in the light at the end of the tunnel.
And I can hold that
and
for
you. You're going to make that journey, and you're going to make it. I can tell you that. You're going to make it. It isn't always going to be easy.
No.
But you are going to make it, because I can tell you, I made it to the light. And that doesn't mean that you don't have bad days. That doesn't mean that you still don't have challenges and things you have to wrestle with. But you learn to manage those. And you, I think at some point, you start to come to terms and have peace with the parts of you that will never be right
be
or
different.
Be normal again, you know, because at the time of the assault, it's just like a bolt of lightning, and all of a sudden your
different.
Life is all
you're different. Your
and
perspective,
yes,
your
everything.
Lenses you look through,
mm-hmm.
the way you look at people, the way you look at
trust in general,
you
and
know.
Then, and
my
then
parents
think,
used to say, don't be afraid, there's no monsters.
Yeah.
Well, Danielle and I know for a fact that there are monsters that will invade your house. So Mr. Gilmore, Richard Gilmore, his GPS was taken off today. So he is no longer being tracked.
Because he's still living in the
downtown area.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not being tracked.
No, Nichelle called us last week or sometime, I don't remember, but he's no longer being tracked. And I freaked out, and what I realized was that it was another stage in this process, and that in a way it's like I'm losing control of his status or his whereabouts. I've known where he has been since December 19th, 1986.
And that's been the fight of your life, knowing where he is.
Knowing where he is. That's the only thing that has given us any sense of comfortability and just knowing where he's at. Like, since he's been out of prison for a year or whatever, a year and a couple months, that somebody could know where he was at.
Traceable.
And
he had so little put on him, right? That level one.
Oh, yeah.
So you just got that little bit and now it's gone.
And now that's mm-hmm. gone. And we I'm were talking sure. and I said, Sissy, I go, he's only 3 years supervision. So.
And you're about half.
Yes. So as much as the governor kept saying, oh, he's going to be on parole till 2032.
That's,
we're like,
but he's not being supervised.
No, he's not. He's
that
only
just means
being,
if he screws up again.
Exactly. So when we hit
that
the 3 year mark.
That means if there's
mark,
another victim.
Yes. So
he'll
we
get
hit
a
that,
harsher punishment.
Yes.
But that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It always takes a woman being a victim to prove that a man shouldn't be out.
So yes. That's something that we're dealing with. And I think that's also what you get in the book, which is unique, is
they,
to see our story, to read our story from the beginning to now. This person is walking amongst us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a real fear for survivors, and
that's a fear.
Yes, I think that's why
I have a little bit of fear. I need to be honest. Like, I'm how don't speak, don't step into the state of Washington. That's all I've got to say. If he is hearing this, I am telling you right now, do not come to Washington. And it's horrific that that's where I go. I've been left with no choice. And they don't seem to hear us, Danielle and I. They don't take our experience and his history at face value. They want to brush it under the rug. Now, do I think that I will be a target? Probably not. I'm not 13. Probably not.
But there's the revenge factor.
But there is the revenge factor. Yeah. And he is crazy enough. Maybe he's like, oh, yeah, you think you're whatever? Okay.
Here's a name in the face that put him there in the first place.
He got 15 more years compliments of us.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I don't think. Unless you are a survivor, you don't realize We were having a conversation today with somebody, and she goes, well, you have a totally different view than I do. She said, you both know that what we go, oh, that won't happen. We have experienced the, oh, that only happens to other people.
Yeah.
And it baffles Danielle and I that they've been so reckless.
And still are.
And still are.
And still are. We'll be back in the next
legislative
session.
I mean, why is he a level
one? I mean, we have got to get the sex offender registry and how they classify offenders. We have got to get that right.
I mean, how many unclassified do we have now? I mean, a year and a half ago was 20.
It was over 20,000.
Yeah, right. So now we're probably more.
What's wild to me.
They're out, but they're not classified.
Yeah, in the communities.
So we don't know if they're a serial rapist or a.
What is the rules around? So if you're level one, you don't have to be on that main registry, right?
Well, you're on the registry. You just
nobody
technically
notifies.
Nobody knows.
Right, they don't have to tell your neighbors.
Or the schools, or the churches, or the neighbors.
Right.
Neighborhood.
You basically can hide in plain sight, which is what we have with Gilmore, which is really scary.
Every murder we cover, there was that red flag opportunity to put
that
them
was
away.
Ignored.
Mm-hmm. It was a first time offender. That's okay, you know. Yeah. And then lo and behold, what happens? They escalate and they murder someone.
Well, and when Nichelle said, "Well, he's doing everything, he's being a good boy." Well, he knows how to be a good boy for 30 years.
A personality. They know
that's how he was able to be a rapist on the loose for 10 years.
Yeah,
you know?
10 years they were looking for him. He had a wife and a job. And
the fact that he was so involved, like, I want to be a police officer.
I forgot about that part. Yes, he was on the short list to become a Gresham police officer.
Because they're obsessed. They are obsessed with it.
And but they think it's, like, exciting.
It's interesting.
Unquestioned.
Tiffany was sharing today how the burden for change is always on the victims.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
There will be a chapter in the book titled When Pain and Politics Collide.
Yeah.
Because literally, your story and trying to get change, those two coming together doesn't always work. Sometimes it's pretty painful. And you don't always get what you want when you know it's right.
Well,
like
look at
what we're
happened
facing
to
now.
Me in 2007, 8, and 9. That political fight totally crushed me.
It did. It sent her back into
two of Colleen Stan. Are you familiar with her story, The Girl in the Box from Northern California? She was abducted, raped, and she's from Oregon.
She was
abducted in Northern California.
Oh.
She's kept in a box for 7 years, treated as a sex slave. He went to prison, but he's only there because she continues to go to his parole meetings and fight. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so that right now, they've been pushing all through COVID. He's supposed to be back in court to see if he is able to be on parole because they think he's still a violent sex offender. But if she doesn't go, if she doesn't speak up,
he will be out. And that's exactly what has
base
happened.
It on.
Yeah.
So what have you been up to?
Yeah.
And you're doing good.
No one seems to care.
No one seems to care.
It's just so frustrating.
Let's take a risk with you.
You have all this documented testimony about these horrible things. I mean, she lived in a box under his bed.
Yeah, okay. I do.
I mean,
why would they even consider him to be out?
Ever.
That is done.
But there's always, he's old. He can't do it anymore.
That's Hannibal Lecter. Oh, the old card. Well, that's why Mr.
I mean, they knocked off part of the sentence because of the California law. That's when you're a certain age. It's like,
you're not
so
going to do that.
I can't remember what they call it.
A sentence is never really a sentence.
No.
Yeah. And one of the things.
Unless you're a serial killer with a true life sentence.
Yeah. One of the laws that we're changing in Oklahoma this session is when a sex offender is sentenced to a period of time, they must serve 100% of that time.
That is so important.
No early
I
release.
Love that.
Mm-hmm. How many times do we get questions in a case like, why were they let out early? Mm-hmm. It's like, because it's an arbitrary number.
Well, and like you said, there's usually always a red flag that just kind of gets ignored.
There always
until,
is.
Yeah.
I've never had a case where there wasn't.
Yeah. It's for Multnomah County District Attorney's race. So our case in particular has a lot of history with Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. And it started, you know, at trial under then DA Shrunk, who was still in office when parole hearings started. He was part of the lawsuit with the Athens family and the DA's family. And then my threatened lawsuit because they weren't going to recognize me as a victim. But every step of the way from trial and then 2 decades later, come parole hearings, they always were by our side. They were there for everything, advocating for us and fighting right alongside us, okay? So then I start, you know, getting into changing laws and stuff like that. So then next thing you know, Rod Underhill is now the DA, and then Russ Ratto is now coming to legislative work groups, parole board groups.
He was retired. We talked about him in that episode.
They've been down that road with us. Everything we did. I mean, they would come down to Salem and sit through hearings with me on different pieces of legislation. Often they would testify as well to the committee in favor of that bill. I remember when Melissa's law passed, which really snowballed then our rape kit backlog and getting through that. Rod Underhill came down there and sat with us in the gallery while the final vote was being taken for Melissa's law. And when it was done, we're all hugging and crying. I mean, we're getting things done. And then with Rod Underhill and the rape kit backlog, he really spearheaded that. And then I ended up working with Portland Police Bureau and the Governor's Task Force and with the DA's office and everything we did all along the way.
They were there.
They were there. They were by our side fighting for us. Okay, then you see what we faced in 2022 with Gilmore's low-level sex offender. He'll have more rights than we do, more freedom.
More protection, too.
This is now under a new DA.
Schmidt,
Yes. Schmidt has become Gilmore's greatest advocate. He really has, because we did so much media and it was at the national level, you know, and we're just going and going and going, and this needs to
change.
So as we're doing all of that, his office is silent.
And then we've
got legislation. We need to fix this. And so I reach out to Schmidt's office. Hey, can you guys support us on this? Never hear back anything. It's just like talk to the hand. And so an office that has for decades stood with us has now turned their back on us.
With no reason.
Because it does not fit this DA's
agenda.
Because in his world, the criminal really is the victim, and the victim is not really the victim. It's the criminal. And that's why you've seen a lot of cases just not get prosecuted. That's why you've seen the mass exodus of law enforcement and the Portland Police Bureau. I mean, there's just so many things that have been broken and dismantled by the current DA. And so you start looking, who will partner with us again? And you know, we've had conversations with Nathan Vasquez. And how do you feel about this? What do you think about this?
What's your record?
And he has been in the DA's office, I think, since 2001.
And he has prosecuted cases.
Yes.
Let's not forget that, because I don't think Schmidt has.
I don't think so either. Oh, it's amazing. When
he doesn't have a lot of experience in the courtroom of prosecuting.
I was surprised. I literally only know him from the billboards. Yeah. Not fans of
exactly. So when you enter, a lot of people never have to experience that world of the DA's office. The only way you experience it is if you're a crime victim.
I think for a lot of
people. But you want a DA that is for you.
Right.
So I'm curious, with your background and your history, Measure 110 for Oregon, the decriminalization law.
Yeah, I have an opinion.
My perception of it, because a lot of people are using it against Schmidt to say this was allowed, what was this supposed to do? And then everything has gone to hell. Of what you know, if any, really my understanding is that the follow through has not happened. I am for it. There are so many people on the street. Why are we going to put them in jail when that's not going to help them in any way? But is the money going to the right programs?
Right.
they're probably, you know, allocating those dollars to programs, but are they really meeting criteria for those contracts or for those programs?
Right. Well, do you think that that's a good idea in general?
Okay, you want, I'm just going to keep it real. Yeah, I'm going to keep it real. I am glad that I went to jail because that is what would wake you up.
Like a rock bottom situation.
Right. Now, did I have to go through diversion? Yeah, but I failed that. I'm telling you that the people that I know all went to prison. My husband went to prison 10 times. You know.
He got a little card.
Punch for free. Punch next out. Visit's free.
Punch out.
You get an extra pillow.
But if you would ask somebody in long-term recovery, like what we are in, they would tell you they were grateful for doing time. It's, I'm just going to speak from my experience. The only time that I would learn something was the hard way. And if that meant losing my freedom, being told when to sleep, when not to sleep, when to walk, when not to walk, that's the only time that would give my brain a reprieve from inducing it with a lot of drugs. Now what we have, like in Clark County, in fact, I have teams that go into Clark County Jail, and we meet with those with high SMI, serious mental illness, and we outreach them while they're in.
Cool.
So that, one, we build a relationship with them. My peers, who all have lived experience, they go in the jail, they pull these people, or the jails will say, will you please meet with this person? So my staff goes in, starts building a relationship, talking shop,
peer
connecting. Yeah. Oh yeah, man, I've been there. You know, whatever.
What a difference in someone coming in like suit and tie. And
I have a PhD.
No, these guys, you know, I remember that. And I'd be like, shut your mouth. You all just know from your textbook.
Yeah.
So go away. I'm going to run circles around you. because we are master manipulators. But so that's what we do in Clark County.
That's
what works. I don't know what they're doing in Portland.
I don't know. The process is incomplete. Like, it's not going to work till all the pieces
are
there.
Yeah, it was like they put the cart before the horse.
Exactly.
Like, we have this idea because we have to do something.
Right.
Let's
I think that is a great idea. Okay.
But, we don't have anything in place.
I'm just going to say it. I think that there should be consequences if you're using heroin or meth or crack cocaine or fentanyl or whatever. Okay? That's against the law. You're going to go do time. But then while they're there getting sobered up and their brains are starting to clear up, get your outreach peer counselors, certified peer counselors in there that have done time, that have lived that life, that can connect with them like that, because not everybody can connect. But that's the beautiful thing about being a certified peer counselor, because I do have that too. But we can connect right away with somebody. Then they can create that relationship, and that person knows, gosh, when I get out, I do have somebody that cares about me.
We talk about that a lot, where there is going to come a time where they get out, and if they're not getting the support they need, all they've learned are new tools to be even more manipulative, know how to be a better criminal. So why not get that support?
They don't have anywhere to go. They don't have money. So what are you going to do? You're going to do what you know. Like, you know, my female clients that were out on the street, I wasn't there to tell them not to do something. I was there, and I would say, do whatever you have to do to stay awake all night. Do whatever you have to do to protect yourself. And if that's staying up all night, then oh well. We'll work on that a different day.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Let's get through today.
Let's get through today. Let's make sure you're safe. I'll see you in the morning. And in fact, one of the gals that I used to say that to, she's now housed in one of our apartments. We have four apartments that we have an MOU with the Vancouver Housing Authority. And so we manage all the people within there. And I have several people in there that I started working with 5 or 6 years ago. I do think that
that consequences are good, and that might not be a really popular opinion.
It's good to hear that opinion, though.
Well, yeah.
Again, you have that experience. I sit back and go, well, that makes sense to me to say our jails are crowded. We don't have the funding. We might as well, like, what good is that doing to lock someone up?
Well, we sure as shit don't hand out foil and straws. We do not do that. That is not harm reduction. That is. When I heard about that,
Portland was.
I was like, what the F are you doing? That's what I thought. I go, oh, so
like, this
that
was
recent? Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I did a video on that too. I had a whole, I think my video got like 30,000, 40,000 views.
They want them to do it responsibly, I think was the.
And I was like, what is going on with the community service outreach programs there?
I have my own thoughts, but
I do too. I, don't make me get into conspiracy. But I do feel that consequences are good. That's when it's painful. That's when we want to stop something. Right. Do I think that it's important to have outreach teams, peers that have lived experience going into the jails and attempting and creating relationships with people that are still there for a while, but we know that they are going to be released. And then that way, so what my team does is we work on the housing. We work on what do we need to get done. We need to get an ID. We need a social security card. We need this. We need that. We need this is this program. We can get you into housing. We can get you into treatment. We can do this. And so that's what Portland needs. If somebody's being naughty, doing a bunch of yay on the street corner, I don't know what, I probably would have died. I probably would have died if I didn't have to try to hide what I was doing. I would have died. I was a major heroin addict. I would have died. Of course, I have a heart for all those that are suffering, all the suffering addicts, because they're my people.
Right.
They're my people.
Which is so refreshing. I feel like I can't think of anyone, but I feel like we've had conversations with people who have gone through the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And it shifts their perspective into, well, I did it. Why are you on the street corner smoking crack? Or I did it. Why are you?
Yeah.
I've seen and heard that where it's just like, I do not have the empathy.
You're
to,
compelling.
To see, yeah.
Come on,
to
they
see
need someone
there
rooting.
You
I love them. Yeah, right where they're at. Right where they're at.
But I will, we keep it real that's with them because I know that they can handle real.
Right.
I don't need to pussyfoot around you. You're a badass. You're out your mind because you're doing too much mess. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I know that you've been traumatized. I know something has happened horribly in your life that makes you think that this is what you need to do. But I can say that they're going to listen to me more than somebody that's just textbook taught or wearing a suit because I can speak their language and they know I'm not talking out the side of my neck. Which means, you know, you're talking at the essence. You know what I mean? And I can say that. I'm not talking out the side of my neck. And then, boom, they're like, oh, you're speaking my language. That's nomenclature. That's like, you know, oh, okay, now I'm listening. And so that's the beauty of peers. But I think that for Portland, let them have consequences. You'll save their life. There is room. And then bring in outreach workers who have lived experience, who has functional programs, and that are allocating the funds from those grants or from those contracts that are doing it prudently and responsibly. And that's why, you know, I oversee 7 programs that are doing that. And I try to be a good steward with all the money that they give us. You know, I have to answer to people, but, you know, we've housed just with my Housing First program, we've housed 100 and something people in 7 months, 8 months.
Oh, goodness, you're doing better than Multnomah County.
Yeah.
And that's just me. And I have 4 peer counselors and 2 housing placement specialists. That's 6 people. And that's just one of my programs. And we've housed, I don't know, countless with our SEBRA program and countless with housing stability or kept them stably housed. So it can be done. But you need to be responsible and good stewards with the funds that you get.
You have to acknowledge that where we're at right now in Multnomah County isn't working.
It's not working.
That's the biggest thing.
Right. So what do we need to do to change that?
and there are solutions and answers, and you have to have somebody that is willing to find out what those are and not just let something go. And unfortunately, I think where we're at right now in Multnomah County is there's not a lot of motivation. It just seems to be a lot of talk, and you hear people complain and complain and complain, do something.
Or kicking it to somebody else.
Yeah.
Somebody
else is like, well, we're gonna form a task force to figure out what we should do. And you're just like, you know, you're in an emergency now.
Yeah, like, I could just tell you, actually.
I can tell you exactly what to do.
Yeah. And, you know, you don't have time to study this for a year.
You can find Tiffany and Danielle individually on social media, and we'll have links in the episode notes. To stay up to date on their book and appearances, please visit sistersinsurvivalthebook.com. You'll also be able to meet them if you're attending the True Crime and Paranormal Podcast Festival in Denver this July. You can get tickets at truecrimepodcastfestival.com and use code RAIN15 for 15% off. You can also meet them at True Crime Fest Northwest Labor Day weekend. You can get those tickets at truecrimefestnorthwest.com. Northwest is spelled out.
As always, we want to thank Danielle and Tiffany for taking time out of their visit to spend it with us. I think they're such a wonderful example of so many things, of survivors, of advocates, and they show that people don't have to agree on everything. We can just sit together and have conversations and share ideas without getting defensive or argumentative. Also, if you know anyone in the publishing world, make sure they know about Danielle and Tiffany's story. Their book is sure to be moving, intense, beautiful, heartbreaking, and hilarious. You can always email us or reach out to them via sistersinsurvivalthebook.com. Murder in the Rain is a Cascade Media production, written, hosted, and edited by Josh McCullough, Emily Rowney, and Alicia Holland. Feel free to email us at murderintherain@gmail.com or through our website, murderintherain.com. For as little as $1 a month, you can subscribe on Patreon to get exclusive access to ad-free and older episodes. For only $5, you can access Patreon-exclusive episodes and content. For more of us, be sure to follow on all the socials, listen to Josh and Alicia on their other show, Always Be My Sisters, and follow Emily on TikTok at @M_murderinTheRain. And suck my balls.